Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with us is co-host TJ Inman. He'll be joining us shortly. Today we are stepping again for the final time outside of the Big Ten and previewing the Group of Five conferences as well as some of the major independents, including Notre Dame, Army, and BYU. So we'll take a look at like the rest of our format for our conference previews. We'll look at conference championship previews, games that people should tune into, and games that might have an impact on a national level at the college football playoff. But before we start, a word from our friends at SeatGeek. I'd like to take a second to introduce our newest friends from SeatGeek. Let them take the confusion out of your ticket buying experience. Instead of shopping across dozens of sites to find the best deal, let SeatGeek do the work for you. And their app scans the web for the best deals to your favorite game, concert, or show, and rates them on a scale of 0 to 10 to let you know if you're getting the best bang for your buck. Green dot marks a great deal, yellow dot good deals, and a red dot not so good deals. Use the promo code ACAA at checkout to receive $20 off your first purchase. That's two free beers at the stadium on them. What are you waiting for? That's promo code ACAA for $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. All right, we are entering August. We're bringing TJ in. Football is right around the corner. We're 25 days away from Indiana kicking off against Ball State. Even fewer days until college football gets underway with week zero. TJ, it's getting to be that time again.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you notice a lot of other, ESPN is kind of ramping up their college football commercials, and a lot of football is back, I think, the slogan right now. So it's definitely getting here. Still got a little bit of the quote-unquote off-season, but, the players are back in camp, so we've got some camp news to, digest and to go over. And then, of course, as you said, week zero right around the corner. So definitely a great time.
Yep, Big Ten Network was out in Bloomington yesterday. I think the content was really good, even though they spent a little bit more time than I would like on other schools. They have an hour. They should spend, at least 45
yeah.
minutes, not including commercials, on IU. But they did have great content from Coach DiNardo, Howard Griffith, Dave Revson was out there as well. So be sure to check that out if you DVR'd it or can find a replay of it. It was last night at 6 o'clock on BTN Live. But let's get into the Group of Five. Group of Five has been an interesting bunch of conferences the last couple of years. You had UCF basically have two undefeated seasons until they lost to LSU in the Fiesta Bowl last year. They were left out of the college football playoff. They were self-declared national champions, and now you have a couple more groups, teams in that AAC. You always have a tough Boise State team in the Mountain West, and some teams out of the MAC and some other conferences who might have a say in if that Group of Five gets a representative in the playoff. But let's begin with the AAC, TJ. UCF is, everybody now knows who UCF is. They went from 0-12 to being self-proclaimed national champions after they beat Auburn after the 2017 season. But there's a lot of questions surrounding them. Mackenzie Milton went down. He's probably not going to play this year. They have a transfer quarterback coming in Deshaun Kizer from Notre Dame. You have the rise of Cincinnati. They're going to be very good. It's going to be a very competitive AAC. And you also have the shadow holding over them that UConn is leaving the conference. And here's how much that UConn means to that conference. The AAC doesn't really care if they replace them or not. UConn was such a poor player in the AAC football-wise that they're not losing anything. And that if they stand pat, they'll probably, be stronger for it. TJ, what's your take on the AAC this year?
Well, I think one of the more interesting things, you mentioned Central Florida, Memphis keeping their head coach, Mike Norvell, in place is, I think, you know, a huge win for them. Certainly continuity in their system, very good offensive team, but they do have to replace some pieces. But I really like Memphis' team this year. I placed a wager on the Memphis over win total. I really like what they've got coming back. I like the style of football that they play. I think that there's two teams that I'm really interested to see what they do. The first one, Cincinnati. Luke Fickell is doing a really good job with that program, and they've got some interesting non-conference games that I think it's going to kind of be a reputation or a barometer for the AAC. And then the second program that I'm interested in is Houston. They were able to bring in Dana Holgorsen from West Virginia. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out, because Holgorsen, it feels like there was a ceiling on what he could do at West Virginia. And with teams like Oklahoma and Texas in the conference, you know, there's a ceiling there. But Holgorsen seems like kind of beat the mob out of town. His people were getting a little restless with him, heads to Houston. And, you know, what do they want out of that? What's the success for them? They've publicly said, look, we will fire coaches for going 8-4. And they had done it. You know, they had made that move and fired Major Applewhite to go get Holgorsen. So I'm really interested to see how that works. De'Eric King is one of the more electrifying players in the country at quarterback for Houston, but Dana Holgorsen not known for defense, and that defense could be a real disaster. So I think that Central Florida and Memphis and Cincinnati, for my money, are the three class teams in that conference this year. I do like the Tigers to win the West Division. I think that they are just better on both sides of the ball than Houston is. King's the best player. I think Memphis has more overall team depth there. Plus, they've got their system in place already. They know what to expect. And then Central Florida versus Cincinnati, who's going to be able to come out there? And I would actually pick Cincinnati to win the East. So I'm going to go with the Bearcats based on, I think Mackenzie Milton is a gigantic loss. And then the player that very possibly was going to be starting at quarterback for them, he also got hurt. And I was never that impressed with the transfer from Notre Dame that they've got starting for him. So I'm going to go with Cincinnati. And,
sorry, it was Brandon.
With Memphis.
Yeah, Brandon Wimbush. Yeah. Deshaun Kizer, it's the first week of school. We're back with students. Yeah. My brain is in a time warp. So I apologize, Brandon Wimbush, not Deshaun Kizer. I think Deshaun Kizer is with the Browns or somewhere along the line there. I apologize. My brain was back in like 2015. But you're right, TJ, there's some interesting parts in the AAC. You got some early non-conference matchups to make some noise. Cincinnati plays two Power 5 opponents right off the bat. In UCLA, that's a home game. That's a home game to kick off the Thursday night of week one. Everybody's going to be watching that game. You knock off UCLA, it's a skin on the wall. Even though UCLA was not bowl eligible last year, it's still a Power 5 skin. And then you go travel to Ohio State. And those are two statement games. You know, if you could go into the shoe, and I think it's been like a million years since Ohio State has lost to an in-state non-conference team, that would be a really impressive win. And then you have UCF hosts Stanford and travels to Pittsburgh. And while those teams are not the marquee teams, Stanford might not be where they were a couple years ago, and Pittsburgh is not the marquee team in the ACC. Those are still two Power 5 teams, and you could get two more skins there. USF also plays Wisconsin at home on that Friday night down in Florida. That's a tough game. It's always tough to open down in Florida. It's hot, sticky. So that's also another chance for the AAC. Temple hosts Maryland. They play Georgia Tech. There's a whole bunch of games that the AAC has a chance to make some noise in the Power 5. And if one of these teams could go undefeated, I think they deserve a legitimate conversation, seat at the table for the college football playoff. If Cincinnati goes undefeated, beats UCLA, beats Ohio State, and goes and runs through the AAC, I think they've done enough to go through and be seriously discussed as a four seed in the playoff. You also have Memphis playing Mississippi, hosting Mississippi there as well. So you could have some group of five AAC, you call them upsets if you want to, over Power 5 conferences. It's going to be a really interesting conference year for them. I will take Cincinnati as well out of the East. Cincinnati hosts UCF in October, first weekend of October. It's that Friday night. That place is going to be buzzing. I'm sure they're going to have that blacked out in terms of the fans. Cincinnati is an underrated atmosphere as well. They had that thing going a couple years ago when they were in the Big East, and then a few years in the AAC. As far as the West, TJ, that was a great point about Houston. And my worry, if I'm a Houston fan, is can you be happy with 8 wins? Everybody's talking about how Houston's a sleeping giant, how nobody wanted them to join the Big 12 because they're in that Houston market. It's a recruiting advantage. They have so many homegrown players, and so on and so forth. But kind of like Charlotte in Conference USA, that it's kind of a sleeping giant. You know, being in a fertile recruiting land does not necessarily mean automatic success. Houston, outside of a 13-1 2015 season, has gone 8-5, 9-4, 7-5, and 8-5. So something, you know, what are you here? And Dana Holgorsen coming in. Maybe he has some magic, can get that program going to where people think it should be. I am going to take Memphis as well in the West. They have to go at the end of the year. They have to play. They end their last three games at Houston, at USF, and Cincinnati. It's going to come down to those three games, whether or not they get tripped up. I don't see an AAC team going undefeated.
No,
especially in conference play. This conference is pretty deep. It's getting deeper. It's tough, and good on them for doing that, and good on them for going out and scheduling people, and good on the Power 5 teams for accepting some of these games that, you know, really hurt your resume if you go down and lose to these teams, because it's a no-win situation for a team like Wisconsin or Stanford. These are teams that people, outsiders, will say you should win, and they won't. So those are my two picks, and we'll move on to the Mountain West. We do have five conferences to cover, so we're going to not speed through them. We'll give them their due diligence, but we're going to cut out some of the stuff that we did when we focused on one conference as a whole. Mountain West, it's a lot of the usual suspects back. San Diego State, Fresno State, you got Boise State, Air Force, Utah State. The team I want to keep an eye on is Hawaii. I think they're at a real advantage, travel advantage for teams visiting them. They get a home date to open the season with Arizona. Hawaii's got some buzz going. It might be buzz, you have to go searching for it. But they might have that program rolling. They're picked to finish third in the West, but they could cause problems for a lot of people. their offense is usually very, very good, and they've put up some really good numbers as well. They take their football pretty seriously out in Hawaii, and it's one of those teams that, you know, if the game's on at 12:30 at night, I might tune into it. So they return, you know, Fred Holly, who was their leading rusher last year, Cole McDonald, threw for nearly 4,000 yards and 36 touchdowns last year. So this offense should be pretty good. They're going to put a scare into people. They have an opportunity to beat Power 5 schools as well. Non-conference, they're playing. They host Arizona and Oregon State. They travel to Washington, and then they host Central Arkansas. So you could realistically, I would not be shocked if they take two out of those three to open the season against Pac-12 opponents. They went 8-6 last year, losing to Louisiana Tech in a bowl game. They've beaten San Diego State. They've beaten some good teams. So Hawaii's kind of my sleeper team in that conference, but I think the conference championship game runs through Boise State. Boise State has earned the right to be that team. Even though Fresno State knocked them off last year, they would still have to go through Boise State for that conference championship game. Fresno State, as IU fans know, they've lost their offensive coordinator. The Hoosiers hired Kalen DeBoer to come over. He did wonders with that offense, and we'll see what Jeff Tedford and the Bulldogs could do. I think it comes down to them and San Diego State in the West, and it's really going to come down to a head-to-head matchup at the end of the year at San Diego State. Fresno State also has to play. They have to travel to Hawaii. They got to travel to San Jose State as well, and they open up against USC. So I'm going to take San Diego State to represent the West in the Mountain West.
Yep, we're in lockstep there. Fresno State, in addition to losing Kalen DeBoer, also lost a really good quarterback, their top two pass catchers, four offensive linemen starters, and a few very good defenders as well. Their defense should be really good again, but I think the offense is going to take a big step back without those pieces, including Kalen DeBoer. Plus, as you mentioned, San Diego State gets to host that game against the Bulldogs. So I'm going to go Boise State and San Diego State with the Broncos winning. Unfortunately for Boise State, I do not think that they will be reaching a New Year's Six Bowl this season. I think that they have to replace too much on offense to get to that level. But that season opener against Florida State should be very interesting to see where both of those programs are right now.
Yeah, if they could get through Florida State and knock off them, although Florida State has lost a lot of luster, it's still a Power 5 win. It's still down going traveling to Florida, even though it's not at Florida State. They're playing in Jacksonville. So it's a de facto home game for Florida State. It's an impressive win. The rest of their schedule is kind of underwhelming. They do host Marshall and Portland State. They get Air Force at home. They do have to travel to BYU, which is always tough.
Yep.
And then in the season, their last five games, three of them are on the road, including the final two. So it's if they go undefeated, their strength of schedule is going to be held against them in terms of going representing the group of five. I think a lot of teams in the AAC have a better claim to that. They have a more difficult schedule. And you have to think that even if Cincinnati goes 11 or 12 and 1, or UCF goes 11 or 12 and 1, that they'll be the representative from the group of five in the New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah.
Then when they beat a Power 5 team in the New York Six Bowl, get ready for those excuses of, oh, it was just the whatever, Fiesta Bowl, it was just this bowl or that bowl. So we'll get ready for that. Mountain West is always fun. There's always some good snow games in there as well that are fun to watch. Boise State, Fresno State was in the snow last year for the championship. So tune into those games. They're good games as well. A lot of times in college football, the best games are between the teams that are matched up evenly, and there's a lot of even matchups in these group of five conferences. So moving on to Conference USA, you have the Fighting Lane Kiffins, Florida Atlantic. They're waiting. You got waiting for them to take off. Florida International has been better than expected, sooner than expected under Butch Davis. You also have Marshall, Middle Tennessee, Old Dominion, Charlotte, Western Kentucky, who's kind of fallen off since Jeff Brohm has been there. And then in the West, Southern Miss, UAB, who's been revived. That program was dead and buried. They brought it back and have been very good. It's probably time for them to take a step back talent-wise, reload recruiting, and then go forward again. But it shouldn't be that big of a step back. North Texas as well, Louisiana Tech. Phil Steele can't make a decision on this. He's got four teams tied for first place in the West. So it's, you know, take your pick. It's very evenly matched up. And then you have the three Texas schools, UTSA, UTEP, and Rice. UTEP and Rice are perennially the some of the worst teams in the country. So Conference USA, what's your take on Conference USA, TJ?
Well, I think Florida International, for me, we've seen that program amassing some talent. And to be honest, I'm glad they're off of IU's schedule because I think Butch Davis is going to have that thing humming pretty soon. Not that Indiana would, you know, lose to FIU. I wouldn't pick that, but I'm glad we don't go back to Florida for another road game there. I think that the Golden Panthers are going to be pretty tough to deal with. I'm picking them out of the East. My one issue that I have with them is that I have seen their quarterback play and I've not been too impressed by it. I think they have a lot of really good athletes. And I think that Butch Davis is developing that thing, but I don't love James Morgan at quarterback. But still, I'm going to go with him in FIU to get that done in the East. The West, I tend, when there's teams that are so clustered like this and it's hard to distinguish them, I just kind of go with who's the real difference maker. And I think Mason Fine at North Texas is that guy. So I'll go with North Texas. They do have to go to Louisiana Tech, which is certainly in Louisiana Tech's favor. If you wanted to go with them, that would be a good reason to do so. They also go to Southern Miss, who is probably, you know, potentially the third best team in that division. But like I said, Mason Fine plus Seth Luttrell, you know, good offensive mind, staying at North Texas to finish up Mason Fine's career. So I'll go with North Texas and the Mean Green to get that done. And then why not? We'll pick North Texas to win the Conference USA title. But honestly, no one in this league really distinguishes themselves to me at all.
Yeah, and that seems what the other analysis is saying. If you pick four teams to tie for first place, that means they're beating up on each other. It's very even. That's not necessarily a bad thing when it comes to entertainment value. But if Conference USA wants to put a team in the discussion for a New Year's Six Bowl, it hurts you. You can't have teams beat up on each other. You need to have one really, really good team and, you know, a couple okay teams. I will take – I'm gonna roll the dice and take Florida Atlantic in the East. It's time Lane Kiffin puts up or shuts up. He's coming off a 5-7 season. He was 11-3 in 2017. He's got DeAndre Francois coming in from Florida State. If he could keep his head together, he's an excellent player. You've got a senior-laden offense. You have a senior-laden defense. If it's now or never for Lane Kiffin at FAU. Now, he might be there forever, but if he wins big this year, he probably moves on. If he goes 5-7 again, his seat is probably, you know, on fire, or you just lose interest in FAU and it loses its luster. You know, there's only so much Lane Kiffin you could take if he's not winning, and that goes for any coach. So I'm going to take FAU out of the East. They do open up their first two. They have a chance to make a splash in their first two games. They head up to Ohio State, take on Ohio State. I think last year they played at Oklahoma and got smacked. That was a game that people had their eye on as an upset. I think they learned their lesson there. Maybe they come out and be a little bit more competitive at Ohio State. And then they host UCF. You could very well go 0-2. If you split that, you have one really good win between the two of them and one tough loss. Those are both good teams you don't really want to lose to, but there's no shame in losing to them either. Then out of the West, pick one out of the hat. I think UAB takes a step back. I really do. They've done a great job rebuilding that program, but it's some roster turnover. The guys who are there building have graduated. North Texas, I'm with the TJ. I think they have, the best returning talent, and we'll see what they could do there, and take advantage of it. And Seth Luttrell stayed. We'll see how long he stays after this. He's taking a big risk staying at North Texas. So,
yeah.
He's had 9 wins each of the last 2 years. His stock could be at its highest ever after last year. He could have gone anywhere he wanted probably, but to stay at North Texas is a risk. If he goes, takes a step back, doesn't get to a bowl game, he might not get that next level chance that he might deserve after the last 2 years. Their schedule is pretty manageable. They do have to go face California and Berkeley. That's another chance for Conference USA to get a win. That's another chance for the Pac-12 to get pied in the face by a Group of Five team. Maybe that's a candidate for one of those 9 a.m. games, which I think is a ridiculous idea. But their schedule, they end at home against UAB. They miss some big guys in, they don't play Florida Atlantic. They don't play FIU. They miss some of the heavy hitters out of the East. So I'll take them coming out of the West, and I'm going to put my money on the Lane train winning Conference USA. It's a gamble, I know, but if I'm going to pick Conference USA, I'm going to pick Lane Kiffin because it's going to be entertaining as hell to watch that team if they're winning. All right, let's go to the MAC. The MAC is right in the Big Ten's footprint. It could be, Big Ten Junior. The MAC has I forgot the exact number, but it seems like the last 5 or 6 years they've always beaten a Big Ten team. Somebody comes up and gets somebody. Last year is Akron and Northwestern. A couple years ago is Bowling Green against IU. Ball State against IU a couple of times. You've seen Purdue get beat by Eastern Michigan. You've seen Rutgers get beat by Eastern Michigan. There's always somebody in the MAC that'll come up and bite somebody in the butt in the Big Ten. So out of the MAC, I think it's finally the year in the East that Ohio gets Frank Solich his win. They've been solid. They've been the most consistent program. He's been there for 15 years. That is a long time at a MAC school. He has built that program up. He is really, really a good coach. He is over. He has 106 wins at Ohio. I think this is a team with senior Nathan Rourke coming back at quarterback, a team with a chip on his shoulder. They know what they have to do. They get some of their big games at home, Western Michigan, Northern Illinois. They get those games at home. They do have to travel to Buffalo and then end the season on a 2-game road trip. And a lot of Maction games. You'll see Ohio on Maction a lot on Wednesday. The end of the season, the last 4 games are Wednesday night, Tuesday night, Tuesday night, Tuesday night. And they end the season on the road at Bowling Green, at Akron, staying in that Rust Belt of Ohio. So I'm going to take Ohio out of the East, and I think I'm going to go Toledo out of the West. It's going to be an all-Ohio, Mac championship game. There are some good teams in the Mac as well. And with Western Michigan, Northern Illinois, there's a lot of turnover in the Mac, too. I think Buffalo takes a step back in the East, and we'll see. We'll see what Akron does. We'll see what some of these teams do. If they're more evenly matched than I expect, I don't think the Mac has a shot at a New Year's Six Bowl either. They do have some chances at some upsets. Ohio does travel to Pittsburgh. That's a game that they could win. Miami plays at Iowa. That's a game that we've seen Miami be competitive at. Buffalo plays at Penn State. If this game was last year, Buffalo knocked off Rutgers last year, looked pretty impressive. They had a 10-win year. This game was last year. I'd give Buffalo a shot. But there are chances. Kent State opens the year at Arizona State. They have some games where they can knock off some people, and the MAC always usually gets one or two of those every single year. So those are my picks in the MAC. How about you, TJ?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ohio as well. I think Nathan Rourke is the best player in this league, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. So I like Nathan Rourke, and that'd be a really cool story for Frank Solich to get a conference crown, after being there for, like you said, 15 years. This is his 21st season as a head coach, so really cool story there. I think Buffalo lost too much to contend, but the East, certainly the weaker of the two divisions. The West, much stronger. I will go with Toledo. One, I think they do have the most overall talent, but their schedule really favors them. They get to host Western Michigan, who I think is probably the second-best team in the division. And then they host Northern Illinois, who, despite going through a coaching change, one that I don't think they were too worried about. I think a lot of people felt like it was time as Rod Carey headed to Temple. I think that kind of benefits both sides, to be honest. We'll see if their new coach can kind of build things where Carey left them. But, you know, new system plus not a favorable schedule, I will give it to Toledo. And then of those two, you've got Toledo, which is, fairly inexperienced in terms of starters, but they've got a lot of guys that have seen snaps, and they recruited better than everybody else in this league for the past few years. So I would give the edge to Toledo based on overall talent. But I would love to see Frank Solich get a conference crown.
Yeah, it just seems that Ohio always comes down the stretch and just loses that one game that costs them either the conference title game or the division title in like a three-way tie, but they lose to the wrong team. So it's time Frank Solich gets his. All right, moving to the Sun Belt Conference. We're getting real down far in here. We've got two five-team divisions, East and West. I think Appalachian State is the team to beat in the East. Scott Satterfield is gone and headed to Kentucky, they've really built Appalachian State up. I think it's sustainable. They're out in Boone, North Carolina. They recruit the area really well. They have a great read of the pulse there. So I'm going to take Appalachian State out of the East. And Arkansas State is quietly becoming Arkansas State again. That was a team about 5-10 years ago, was one of these mid-major teams that would come up, put some scares into SEC teams, beat some lower-tier SEC teams, and really play well. So I'm going to take Arkansas State out of their division, but I'm going to take Appalachian State to win the conference. And Appalachian State is a team that nobody should want to face. They do have some chances at upsets. They do go to North Carolina, and they also play South Carolina late in the year. They have a chance to make some noise on a national level as well. Although North Carolina is rebuilding, and really South Carolina, they're a good, solid team, but they're not the first team you think of in that SEC East. But those would be two big wins out of there. They return a lot of talent. They return you know, three backs who combined for over 2,000 yards rushing, a really efficient passer in Zach Thomas who threw for 2,000 yards and 21 touchdowns. This offense is really going to be good, and hopefully Appalachian State could keep it going off, going on after Satterfield left. And Elijah Drinkwitz takes over as well. So I'm taking Appalachian State to win the Sun Belt. How about you, TJ?
Yeah, Appalachian State clearly the class of the league, in my opinion. Now, what's interesting, the three best teams in this league are almost without dispute in the same division. Troy, a very good program with Chip Lindsey as their first-year head coach. He is succeeding for Neil Brown, who moved on to West Virginia. Chip Lindsey, bright offensive mind. They're hoping that he can, you know, build Troy up to meet Appalachian State. I mean, I think that the third best team is surprisingly Georgia Southern. If you remember, IU played them a few years ago and just stomped the mud hole in them. They were awful. The head coach at that time was fired, and Chad Lunsford was brought in. Now, last year, he turns Georgia Southern into a team that, you know, wins 10 games, which is remarkable given what we saw from them just a short time ago. I believe that game was in 2017 that IU played them and really embarrassed them. They had nothing going for a pretty proud program with a good tradition. And so they've got things going, but they're probably third in their division because it's a really good division. If they were in the other one, they'd probably be the favorite to win their division. But on the other side, I'm going to go with Louisiana. I do like Arkansas State's logo, the Red Wolves. I think they've got a really cool aesthetic, but I will go with Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns, which is a great nickname. I think the Sun Belt's a cool conference. It's got a lot of schools in close proximity, a lot of fan bases that are really passionate about their schools. They get good support there. I'll go with Louisiana. Don't really have a great reason for it, other than that they won the division last year, and Billy Napier is recruiting at a higher level than almost everyone else in the conference. Really, App State's the only one that's close at this time. So I think he's raising the recruiting, the talent level at Louisiana. And for me, that's just going to win out and have them repeat as division champs, and then App State takes the conference crown in the title game. But I think that's a fun league. They've got a lot of athletes that can give teams some problems when they get to face off against them.
Yeah, Arkansas State, and you know, all these Sun Belt teams are usually some of the better bowl games or when these schools, the Sun Belt and Conference USA, play against each other and put up a ton of points and play close games and like quadruple overtime games and stuff like that. Let's move to Independence. We're going to talk about IU fans' second favorite team, maybe first favorite team. Yes, I am taking a shot at you Reversible Jacket fans. So be sure, if you're an IU basketball fan, Notre Dame football fan, please tune into our podcast because we are previewing Notre Dame football. So, Reversible Jacket fan, Notre Dame, they made the college football playoff last year. You guys are back, top five. Let's talk about national title hopes. All right, let's slow the roll. I think Notre Dame's going to be very good this year. They bring back Ian Book. He really sparked that team as well. That defense, they do have to replace, three of their top five tacklers. They have to replace Julian Love, but they get a lot back. They bring back three. Ian Book was their third best rusher. They bring back him and two running backs who finished above him. Book finished 26,000 yards, 19 touchdowns, only seven picks. I think this is the year, Notre Dame has a right to be in that college football playoff discussion. Now they're going to have to win games. Their schedule is laid out. This is the way they'll play five ACC teams, but this is the way Notre Dame scheduled. This is the reason why Notre Dame schedules the way it does. They want a national fan base. They want They want to hit the East Coast. They want to hit the West Coast. They want to hit the South, and of course the Chicagoland area, and have that national fan base recruit on a national level as well, which kind of kept them back. You saw Clemson run over them in the Cotton Bowl last year, and you also had you saw what they did in the national title game against Alabama. They might not have the athletes that some of these ACC and SEC teams have. They probably need to tweak recruiting a little bit more, go hit some of these spaces and get these athletes. But you look at their schedule, they play Louisville on Labor Day, that Monday night national TV game. Everybody's going to be tuned in. In week three after an open week, you have New Mexico. Then the schedule starts building up. You got to go to Georgia. That's going to be a game with college football playoff implications. Georgia can't really afford to lose a game in the non-conference. Going down there, it's going to be a great game, great atmosphere. They're fired up. I know Notre Dame is going to travel well. Georgia traveled well up to Notre Dame a couple years ago, and it's going to be a heavyweight September battle. Notre Dame then comes home and plays Virginia. Virginia's a tough ACC squad. Then you get Bowling Green before USC comes in. That's a rivalry game. That's a game Notre Dame has to win. You cannot lose to USC and want to go to the playoff. You have a second open week, October 19th. Then you play, I think it's the nation's oldest rivalry, at Michigan. This is a game that I wish was played every year. Notre Dame, Michigan, it's a national rivalry. It means a lot to a lot of people, especially in the Midwest. It just screams college football. After that, you host Virginia Tech. You play at Duke. Navy's another traditional rival. Boston College and at Stanford. There are some marquee wins on there if they could get them. If Notre Dame beats Georgia but loses one other game, I think they're pretty safe in the college football playoff. They probably need to go undefeated, but it's going to depend on the rest of the country, what happens, to see how many losses Notre Dame could endure and still be in the college football playoff discussion. They're at a disadvantage since they're not in the conference. They don't get that last data point. They don't get a conference title game. That's on them. If you want to join a conference, play in a conference championship game, that's on them. I don't think Notre Dame deserves to play a 13th game just because at the end of the year, if they're talking about the college football playoffs, Notre Dame's an independent. They know the risks and the risks about it. This is why they have their TV contract with NBC. It's why they got into this five games a year with the ACC. If you want a harder schedule, don't schedule New Mexico and Bowling Green. If you want to schedule somebody else, some other Power 5 teams, go ahead. If that's how you get your strength schedule up, you might have to bite the bullet and take another loss. But Notre Dame's, I think, going to be pretty solid this year. They're fun to watch. It's as much as I make fun of the reversible jacket fans, I so badly want there to be a college football culture in the state of Indiana that it's. I think one of the ways to grow that is to have Notre Dame be good. And it's tradition. It's, again, like Indiana basketball, Notre Dame football. I wish people would root for their own schools. And things like that. If you're a Notre Dame football fan, that's fine. If you're an Indiana grad and root for Notre Dame, okay, but support your team too. Just like Notre Dame basketball. If you're a Notre Dame fan and you root for Notre Dame football, support your basketball team. Your basketball team's pretty darn good. Don't flip-flop. You could root for IU too, but support your programs. And that's my soapbox. I'll get off of my soapbox, TJ. Let you talk about Notre Dame for a little bit.
Oh, gross. That was far too much talk about Notre Dame for my liking, to be honest. I will give them credit. I think their program's in a really good place. Brian Kelly has built that to where they are at reload level, not rebuild level, I think. I don't think you're going to see the drop-off like they had after their last college football playoff berth where they went 4-8. Offensive line returns four starters and is always really good for them. I think they feel really good about Jafar Armstrong, their new running back, new starting running back, I should say. Chase Claypool is a good receiver for them. Ian Book, of course, returns at quarterback. I think the defense takes a step back, and I see Notre Dame finishing at 10-2, which I do not think puts them in the college football playoff discussion. However, it does get them New Year's Six Bowl. The independent with the best record will not be Notre Dame. It's going to be Army. I like Army to go 11-1. The only game I see them losing is Week 2 at Michigan. You look at the rest of that schedule.
If you're going to go 11-1, TJ, take it the whole way. Take it the whole way.
Well, I would absolutely love to see a 12-0 Army with a win over Michigan and get them in that New Year's Six Bowl. I don't see them beating the Wolverines, but I'm going to be rooting like crazy for the Black Knights to go in there to Michigan Stadium and beat Jim Harbaugh. That would be fantastic. It would make a lot of the rest of the season largely irrelevant because it would be hard to top that one. But the rest of that schedule, there's just not much there. Like I don't see Army really being challenged too often the rest of the way. Really, really favorable schedule for them. They do have the nation's second longest winning streak, and I think this is going to be the final season for Jeff Munkin at Army. I see him going somewhere else. And actually, what I'm a little bit scared of is Jeff Munkin might be the next Rutgers head coach, and that terrifies me.
Can I sell you on Army beating Michigan?
Oh, absolutely. I would. I mean, trust me, I'll be there for it.
Army runs the triple option. They run it really well. Michigan's got a young defense. It's the second game of the year. Let's go play. Army took Oklahoma to overtime last year. Michigan's defense is head and shoulders better than Oklahoma. But Army's not going to back down from anyone. They're not going to back down from anyone in college football. They have bigger, more important things on their mind than being afraid of Michigan. It's a great thing that Army football is good again. It stunk when they stunk.
That's cool.
West Point is such a traditional place. Going back to Army Navy, it makes that Army and Navy game so much better. Hopefully Navy can rebound a little bit in that game. Is competitive for the foreseeable future, but Army's really, really interesting. You know, Kelvin Hopkins is a great running back. You have he also threw for 1,000 yards. You don't think about that at Army. I think a couple years ago they threw 20 passes all year. You don't think of these triple option teams throwing the ball. Hopkins. They threw it less than 100 times, and he threw for over 1,000 yards. So think about that. Think about how many times Peyton Ramsey threw the ball and how many yards he threw for. This guy threw it 93 times. 93 times. Threw for 1,026 yards. That's really efficient. I think Army has a shot at Michigan. I think Army, outside of that game, I really think that they could go undefeated. Now, you're playing that last game in December against Navy. It's anybody's game. That is a true rivalry game. Anything can happen. Sometimes it's snowy. It's rainy. That game's a must-watch game any year. It's usually the only game on TV, December 14th. People are winding down from conference championship games. Kids are just getting off of school right around then for winter break. That is a fun game. I'm all in on Army, and I won't be shocked if they go into Michigan and beat them. Army's not going to back down from anybody. I think that young defense is a little bit susceptible, especially to a very disciplined, efficient Army offense. Now, the Army defense has to come and show up and play as well. If they don't show up, they're not going to outscore Michigan. This Army's not going to win this game 55-52. Army's going to have to grind out possessions, make it you know, maybe you get two possessions a quarter, making an eight-possession game, and be efficient with those possessions. We saw it when Navy came to IU in 2013. You go down, you take 8 minutes, you put points on the board, preferably touchdowns. If you could do that, it makes Michigan's offense have to be perfect. And if they're not perfect, their second game of the year, new offensive coordinator, and things like that, they're going to get beat. So I'm high on the Army. The next independent is BYU. BYU is another fun team to talk about. Open up with the Holy War against Utah. It's one of the better underrated rivalries, I think, in college football. These two fan bases actually hate each other. You throw religion into anything, and it's like throwing a gas can on a fire. Religion plays a big part in the BYU-Utah rivalry. This year's game is on that opening Thursday night. It is at Utah, and then after that, they have to travel to Tennessee. They get USC, Washington, at Toledo, at USF. There are a lot of games where that BYU can make a name for themselves. They went up last year and beat Wisconsin. Wisconsin does not lose at home in the non-conference. It seems like it forever. BYU is always an interesting team. They also have all these older guys because they go in and do their missions and then come back. Zach Wilson's a sophomore. He's coming back. He has 1,500 yards to his name. BYU is an interesting team. They're not going to be in play for a New York Six Bowl, but they should be a bowl team.
No.
They should be fun to watch. And there's some matchups that, I'll tune into. I want to see BYU beat USC. That game's at BYU. I want to see BYU take on Washington. They'll have some say in the Pac-12. They play three Pac-12 teams. Two of them are the favorites in Washington and Utah. So BYU could very well, even though they're an independent, knock the Pac-12 out of the college football playoff discussion. What's your take on BYU?
They've got a fun quarterback, certainly comparisons to Johnny Manziel in terms of running ability and style are made. He's not that level of player, but you can catch glimpses of Johnny Manziel if you watch him play. Brutally difficult schedule. I do think the program has rebounded a little bit from where they were at 2 years ago in terms of talent level, but still, I don't view BYU as being anything better than, I think the ceiling there is 7-5. I think that would be quite an accomplishment if they got that with this schedule. I will say that opening game, give me Utah all day in that one. I think that Utah is going to handle them. I don't think it'll be a blowout because of the rivalry factor, but I think Utah wins that game somewhat comfortably, as we discussed, very high on the Utes.
Yeah, and it's, I'm not saying that they'll beat Utah, but they have a chance to make some waves. And
oh, sure.
That game, and with any rivalry game, especially at the beginning of the season, you're still trying to feel teams out and things like that. So that's a game early in the season I'm definitely tuning into, or at least DVRing and watching the next day since school will be in session. Next up, we'll talk a little bit about the next. I think we're done with the independents. You got Liberty with Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We'll see how that situation goes.
Let's not.
Yeah. New Mexico State, it was 3-9. And then you got UMass. Somehow UMass is still an independent.
Get out.
Why they're still an FCS, yes. I don't know. It's Utah. It's UMass. But anyway, TJ, that wraps up the game, the Group of Five, the Game of Thrones. The Group of Five preview, we are on to the Big Ten West next week. We are getting so close to college football. You could taste it. We're 25 days away, 24 tomorrow. Fall camp is underway. We'll have all our updates. Andrew Walker, one of our new writers, will be down in Bloomington at as many practices as he can make and giving us full reports from there. So final thoughts on the Group of Five, TJ.
Well, I think that it's hurt a little bit by the overall kind of lack of standout teams in a couple of these conferences, but there's a lot of good teams out there, a lot of good footballs played. And the cool thing is that, you know, I know it has its detractors, but you can catch these schools, a lot of the better conference games, typically during the weeks to get them some exposure. So we get to see them. If you're interested, you know, on Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, Thursdays or Fridays, a lot of times you could see some of these headline games in these conferences and get a chance to watch some really entertaining action. So I'm thankful for that. It's another cool part of college football. Are any of them going to impact the national title race? No, but that doesn't mean it doesn't matter.
Yeah, my final thoughts on the Group of Five are exactly the same. These are the games you talk about at the water cooler on Friday morning. Hey, did you see that 52-50, you know, Toledo game in the fog, the Maction game, things like that? I do think that they will have a say. Some team will have a say on the national title game, whether they beat somebody who has national title hopes or they go in, undefeated and force their way to the table. If you know, if a team like FAU beats Ohio State, or a team like Cincinnati goes undefeated and beats Ohio State and UCLA, they deserve a shot at least being in the discussion. Now, it's a long shot, a very long shot, but I think there somebody in these Group of Five teams is going to upset a Power Five team that's going to wreck somebody's season. It happens every single year, and it's fun to watch. These are the games when there's nothing on TV and you're fighting for the remote. These are the entertaining games. Now, there might be 17 people in the stands, but that's because you're playing on a cold, rainy, wet night in northern Ohio. But these games are made for TV, and I think that I wish more fans would show up. And I always try to get to a Maction game every year, but they haven't been at Ball State for a while. These are the fun games to watch to me. They're usually even matched teams. Games come down to the wire, a lot of offense. And if you're like an NFL fan or a fantasy football NFL draft guy, there is always some fun players to watch in the Group of Five. And then of course you have Notre Dame as well, and some of these independent games are great with Army and things like that. So, TJ, thanks for joining us on this Tuesday. Sorry we moved things back a day. I am really swamped at school. They just keep piling stuff on our plates and expect us to get it all done while taking our preps away. But that's neither here nor there. I'm ready for college football. I'm ready to start breaking down the Big Ten. So thanks for joining me. We'll talk Big Ten West next week. All right, that does it for our Group of Five and independent football team preview. Next week, we're moving to the Big Ten West. Please come back to HoosierHuddle.com for all your Indiana football content. We'll reach out to stuff on a national level as well, as you've seen over the last couple weeks. We are in Big Ten mode. From here on out, we're talking Big Ten, we're talking IU, and things like that. So follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. Feel free to join our emailing list on Squarespace. A little pop-up will come up on the site on Hoosier Huddle. We'll send out weekly emails recapping games, recapping recruiting, all that stuff in one place so you don't have to go everywhere else. So thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week to talk to Big Ten West.